Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 129. And my guest today is the absolutely amazing Michaela Cole, who I'm a massive fan of. So, yeah, this is a really good one. You're going to absolutely love it. This is our last actual, like, proper guest of the year. Actually, that's not true. I'll tell you what's going on. We're ending the year with some very special episodes. But first of all, I should mention Christmas is coming and speechdevelopmentrecords.com has got your back. We've got the brand new Drunkcast tees, which have been flying out. I'm recording this intro a week in advance. When we did the pre-order for them, we sold out of the bundles because you can get, there's basically a t-shirt for me, a t-shirt for Chris and a t-shirt for Stu. Mine is based on when I was saying that I'm going to ride a fireball backwards into hell, listening to Thunderstruck, sticking up two middle fingers, and also based on the No Time to Explain incident. Stu's is a uniform for the Whiffin, which is his shed essentially, which is where we record them normally. And Chris's is Craig's dojo with a list of things that they train at the dojo, and it specifies no prior experience or underwear required. They're good fun. Go and enjoy them if you want. You can buy them individually. It's a front and back print. You can buy them individually for $15.99 or three for £40. So it's a good little saving there. But we've also got tons of other stuff. We've got bobble hats. We've got Scroobius jumpers. We've got I'm stuttering a lot today. How strange. We've got Scroobius Pip jumpers. We've got jackets. We've got t-shirts. We've got my DVD. That's a great gift. In fact, what's an awesome gift is Rob Alton's new album, At Home with Rob. A lot of you will have seen his Letter from Father Christmas video, which I directed and edited, which was nice. It's been going crazy on Facebook and YouTube. It's had like 30 or 40,000 views, and it's a 9-minute spoken word piece, but it's absolutely amazing. That is off of his album At Home with Rob, which you can buy on signed CD or download. So head to speechdevelopmentrecords.com and check all that stuff out. Let me tell you what's happening for the rest of the year. As you will know, some of the most popular episodes are the Drunk Casts, which is me, my mate Chris and my mate Stu just getting drunk and talking about stuff that we've been up to. They started this time last year when we did an end of year review, and we wanted to trump that this year. We've done four different drunk casts over the year, maybe five. And we wanted to trump that. So we've got some special guests. So as well as me, Stu and Chris, we're going to have the recent Biffa Award winner for Best Supporting Actor in an Independent Film, Brett Goldstein, star of Super Bob, co-star with me of Corner Boys and numerous other things. He's absolutely amazing. And we're going to be joined by, his TV show has been one of the biggest things on the BBC this year. His DVD is one of the biggest stand-up DVDs of the year. We're joined by Ramesh Ranganathan. So all five of us are going to be getting drunk and reviewing the year. Now, the first time we ever did this, the plan was for it to be two or three episodes. It ended up being five or six because we got really hammered and just kept going. We will see what happens. I don't know how many it will be. I don't know how messy it will be. I don't even know when I'm going to put them out. It will be next week's. Part one will be next Wednesday. That's a given. After that, it depends how many there are and when I put them out and when's good and when's convenient. So yeah, there's a lot of them to come. They're going to be a lot of fun. Check them out. But on to today's guest, Michaela Cole. I love this girl. I think she's awesome. I think she's insanely talented, wonderfully open, opinionated and intelligent. I really think she's awesome. She had a series called Chewing Gum. I mean, we talk about it all here, but it blew up this year, I think, or end of last year maybe. And it won all sorts of awards. It won BAFTAs, and she's won tons of awards for best writer and best comedy performance and everything. She's great. She was also in Aliens, which I absolutely loved, and Black Mirror. So pretty much all the cool shows she's involved in. So I think you're going to enjoy this one. Wonderfully open, wonderfully honest. I enjoyed how much I got wrong in this. And it sounds like a weird thing to enjoy, but I like it when I've prepared questions and I'll be like, so growing up in this situation, did that kind of set you up well for this? And so many of them things I put forward got responded to with, no, not really. But I like that openness and honesty to go, no, you're wrong, you're an idiot, here's what happened. So yeah, I think you're going to enjoy this. I'll be back at the end to give you a bit more information and ramble on for a bit. And then, yeah, let's get on with the podcast. This is episode 129 of the Distraction Pieces podcast with me, Scroobius Pip, and Michaela Cole. It's fine. You can have noise and okay. Stirring.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, true. I think we've just started with the the squeezing of some honey.
Yes.
Is how we started it.
Stirring of a ginger tea bag in a mug. Hi.
So I'm joined today by Michaela Cole. How are you?
How am I? My voice is gone a little bit. I'm croaky. And I don't know why. All I did yesterday, I sat on the sofa with Kadeef, who plays Aaron in my show.
Yep.
And we illegally streamed a bunch of American reality TV shows.
Great.
Yes, I watched Love and Hip Hop.
Is it good? I haven't. The last time I was in America, I was staying with a mate of mine who's a screenwriter, is really successful, really intelligent, and all the stuff she recommended was American reality TV. And I was like, is this the way? But apparently it is.
It's really... basically, it's like Jerry Springer,
yeah,
but without Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
So there's no leader. It's just these bunch of people.
It's just mayhem.
Yeah, Love and Hip Hop is about, hip hop artists, like rappers, and yeah. They're like wives or girlfriends or mistresses.
Amazing.
And there's always like actual physical violence.
Wow.
And that's the best part, when someone just goes for someone.
And it's not focusing purely on one person.
No.
Because Flavor originally had his one that was like a bachelor type show.
Yes.
Where people auditioning to go out with Flavor Flav.
Yeah, that sounds really cringe. I never saw it. But I know this kind of came from that show.
Right. Yeah.
And no, it's like an ensemble.
Brilliant.
Like so many different people in it. And it's crazy. It's clearly also like fake and it's set up.
Yeah.
But
of course.
You just, you know. If you're good at watching TV, I'm very good at watching TV.
Right.
I can put all of that to the side. I can pretend that this is real. And then I have the best time ever.
I love it. I recently watched a series called Unreal, which is on, it's on Amazon, or you can illegally stream it.
I've got Amazon.
It's on Amazon Prime.
I've got my Amazon, I've got my Netflix.
It's like a drama show. So it's fiction, it's actors and that, but it's about the behind the scenes of a reality show.
And of someone, a reality show.
Yeah. And someone recommended it to me. I was like, that sounds awful to me. But it was fantastic. So
Sounds good.
They've written a drama that's about behind the scenes of a bachelorette type show. And it's kind of, apparently it's incredibly well researched and a lot of, not based on real people,
but this
shit went down. And it was really good fun. I really enjoyed it.
Wow.
What other reality shows have you been watching? Has it just been churning through... Love and Hip Hop.
Love and Hip Hop. What other reality shows have I been watching recently? Do you know what?
That's
I must
good.
Admit, that's probably it. I've been watching a lot of actual proper TV. Like,
that's good.
I've been watching quality, not just trash.
That's good.
So it's good.
Because I enjoyed it. When you're on Adam Buxton's podcast, and shout out to Adam, I love him, and I recommend people listen to that podcast, if not purely for your story of going to a sex club.
Yes.
Which is it's quite amazing.
One?
And we're not going to go into it here because that's Adam's.
Yeah, that's Adam's.
That's yours and Adam's.
Yes.
It's beautiful. You've got that. But it's a hilarious story. I thoroughly enjoyed it. But on that, it was quite nice that every time he was throwing forward kind of, oh, were you influenced by this and this? You were most of the time going, no, not really. I wasn't really. I watch a lot of comedy or things like that.
Yes.
So it was quite nice that you seem or there's a purity to what you do and what you've created, in that there's not loads of direct influences.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
It's not on purpose, though. It's not that I was like, I could watch that, but nah. It wasn't under my radar. So it wasn't that I like rejected.
Yeah.
Because in the future, I'm going to be a comedic star.
I don't want to be influenced by these people.
Yeah, but you know, that's happened. I remember also I did a play back in the day, my play, Chewing Gum Dreams.
Yeah.
I did that in in Amsterdam. No, that's a lie. In The Hague, in the National Theatre. And I remember the woman that kind of like produced the event. I will never forget this very throwaway comment that she made, which it was about like the fact that I hadn't read a lot of books.
Yeah.
And she kind of went like, oh, no, no, it's good. You know, she should stay like that. And I don't believe that, because it's not that I someone gave me a book and I was like, nah, yeah. I just don't know about the books. But she kind of had this opinion that, which maybe has some truth, that like not being aware of a lot of stuff that a lot of, like, I guess my counterparts are aware of has made me different.
Yeah.
And that's probably true. But I also think it's probably never great to be ignorant.
Completely.
And
completely.
I've probably got like an ignorant thing going on.
And that's it. I think I completely get the idea of you're probably not making the mistakes that you might have made if influenced by other people, by more other people. But equally, you've got to a certain point and you're going to, like, no matter how successful you've been, which we will get onto, what an amazing couple of years it's been for you, you're still going to want to develop, right?
Yeah.
And I think everyone has that feeling of, oh man, I've kind of fluked it up till now, or it's just happened.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure you're stoking that fire to kind of go, right, there's going to be more.
Yeah,
there's going to be more to come.
Like I recently read Zadie Smith's new book, called Swing Time.
Yeah,
and if I'm very honest, I only read that book because it was sent to me.
Yeah.
I would never have thought to go and pick up a book.
Yeah.
And because the book is long, it's like, it was a challenge for me to read
it.
But fuck me, it was incredible. And I haven't read, you know, she's done White Teeth that everybody was raving about.
Yeah.
I just never, I don't know why I didn't think to go and read the book.
Yeah.
I just didn't read the book. It's good. It was forced in my hand.
Yeah. And that's wicked. And it's really important to discuss and address that, because I've had a similar kind of coming up in the spoken word scene of people assuming I'm very well read when I'm not that well read. And it's only been in the last 4 or 5 years that it's a similar thing. And my brother will kind of, he'll force books on me. He'll go, here's a really good book. You should read this. Like, he's kind of got what I enjoy or what. And that's been an absolute godsend, because it's like, I wouldn't have found that book any other way. I wouldn't have just stumbled upon that. It's kind of a cheat because he's read hundreds of books to get there.
Yeah.
And I get to skip straight to that bit and go, there you go. I'll read that one. That's great. But that's a good thing, right? And again, it's, I do think it's important to address and be open about that kind of thing. So anyone who hasn't read loads of books can know that that doesn't mean you're lesser or you can't do anything, or you should never read a book and things like that, you know?
Yeah, because like, it's good to read. I don't read much.
Yeah.
I really don't. I don't read much. It's good to read, but also it's good to, I don't know. Is there music playing?
It's outside.
Sorry, I thought my MP3 was on or something.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, because, you know, I wonder, like, Zadie Smith's process probably wasn't mainly reading a bunch of other books.
Yeah.
She lived and she watched life and she travelled, and I do think that is equally as important as having found out everything that came before you, which is also important. But I think
completely.
There's nothing wrong with me just kind of living.
it's drawing from your real life and your real experiences and your own experiences. But then if you want to bring books and literature and everything else into those experiences, then that's just adding to it.
Yeah, and I think naturally they are, but it's just the degree to which you want to douse your brain, if that's the right phrase, in work that other people have created. And I guess mine hasn't, I haven't done a lot of that.
Yeah. What was your kind of growing up and upbringing like? You kind of have said you weren't a massive reader. What was you grew up in Tower Hamlets, right?
And
What was school life like at that point? Were you drama and that kind of thing, or were you not?
Nah, shit, just like proper. I think what, like, when I do these things, what I think I'm now only literally in this conversation right now realizing is that I'm from a world where you are, thinking is not really encouraged.
Yeah.
So, like, activating your brain is not really the thing to do.
Yeah.
So, when you asked me, so what were my school days like? I mean, you was in school. Yeah. You know, you were there.
You're at school, yeah.
You're at school. There's a lot of fights. They're quite fun to watch. Not so fun when you're in them.
Yeah.
It was girls' school. Weren't really any guys around.
Yeah.
Wasn't really a lot happening.
No.
It's just not very exciting.
No, it's just...
Yeah, it's school. Not that I didn't watch all these comedies because I was busy...
Doing these amazing
things in school.
This wonderful school life.
You just sat there. I'm very able to function without using my brain.
Yeah.
I can just sit down. I don't think a lot. There's not like a million thoughts going through my head.
Yeah.
I'm just chilling.
Yeah.
I've just been chilling, you know.
I like it. So what was your process into kind of creating them?
Because
you come from this. You started off in spoken word,
yes,
right?
Yes, indeed.
Back in the day.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah,
how did like that kind of come about? Like, what drew you there, considering, as I said, there wasn't that much inspiration from the sounds of things around you?
So I became a Christian, which really... So that would be the one thing. I can't pin down how that happened.
Right.
Or, like, why.
Yeah.
But that really did happen. Like, I fully was submerged into... Pentecostal Christianity, and you get a Bible with that. So, and in the Bible, there's Psalms, which are often very poetic.
Yeah.
So I was reading these Psalms, and I remember what Psalm was that? Psalm 139.
Nice.
And it's about you being kind of made by God and your worth as a person. And I'd never read this kind of stuff before that was basically telling me to say positive affirmations, basically, about who I was.
Right, yeah.
And that's what made me start writing poetry. I started writing my own version of the Psalms. It's exactly what my first poem was. And that's what led me to poetry. And I remember, I know the day, it was the 22nd of May, 2006.
Yeah.
And I wrote this poem and I sent it to my friend. I said, what do you think? And she's like, yeah, it's good. I went to a pub and I did the poem. Yeah, I think that's on the Adam Buxton one,
right,
isn't it? I don't want to share. I don't want to copy
no,
it.
No, that's fine. But that's fascinating that religion kind of came out of nowhere and inspired in that specific a way. Are you religious now? Have you continued to be religious? Or
no, I fell away from the faith. When was that? When did I officially really not go church and not believe in the Bible? I'd probably say 2012, 13.
That's interesting.
It's quite recent, really.
But still, so you had a good kind of 6 years or so. And it's fascinating with religion how you can just fall into it, but fall deep. Because it's so, well, this is how life is, and this is such a community and such a... it's done in such a matter-of-fact way. People shit on Scientology a lot because of the weirdness of it and all that, and I get that, but it's not that much weirder than any of the other religions.
It's really
just
not.
That those religions are so matter of fact. It's like, no, yeah, that's fine. This is accepted. It's not questioned. So it's
like,
easy to
Jesus
fall into.
Is coming back.
Yeah.
The whole world is going to end. The skies are going to open.
Yeah.
There's going to be creatures and shit.
Yeah.
Like, he died on the cross and he came back.
Yeah.
It's genuinely believe...
Are from aliens and that.
It's
Scientology
no,
says it's...
Do you know what? I've recently realised I was sat with my friend having a chat and she said, it's literally like... And the thing is, I don't want to like shit on religion.
Yeah.
But this is just how I feel.
Yeah, sure.
It's a bit like, you know, when you're told about Father Christmas and he comes with the chimney and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like believing that.
Yeah.
And never being... Never understanding that's it's not true.
Yeah.
That's kind of... And I was that person. I was walking around.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. And I was like, I know there's loads of people that are still like, I don't have a... I know it sounds like... but it is like... It is kind of like
if you
walking around going, there is a man in a white suit and he's got a beard and he's got a, you know... What are the things? The sleigh is in the sky.
Yeah.
Loads of mini helpers.
Yeah.
And he drops a gift through your chimney.
Yeah.
Because, like, everyone's got a chimney.
Yeah. He's watching
you. Just haven't found your chimney.
Again, it's very similar. He's watching you. He's omnipresent.
Yes.
Similar to God.
Completely.
He can see if you're being good or being bad.
Yes.
Similar to God.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. Do you have any regrets of getting into all that, though? Because I went to a Catholic school and I was never that into it. I was confirmed and all this kind of thing, so I guess I must have had some belief. But again, it was more, well, that's just what you do.
Yes.
I was just going along with it rather than praising the Lord in reality. But
yes.
Again, I don't think it's bad to be exposed to those things and to learn some of the morals or whatever they're putting in their stories.
Yes. Well, I think, so for me, what church did to me that, I mean, I'd be a crazy person to regret this,
yeah,
is that it completely opened me up to spirituality.
Yeah.
I believe in spirituality.
Yeah.
I still pray. Yeah. I believe that there's something in the air,
yeah,
you know.
Know what you're praying to, or no, who you're praying to.
No.
You're praying to some kind of...
Yes, and I don't believe that it is. We have, in the history of mankind, we have not been able to find out what that thing, mm-hmm, is. And so I'm happy to just... We don't know.
Yeah.
There just might be something, you know, like whatever, whether it's, yeah, scientific, whether it's sort of quantum physics, and somehow...
But something that's not understood and not explained,
yes,
as so far. And
exactly,
that's, again, that's kind of... In many ways, even science... would agree with that,
yes,
version of,
exactly,
spirituality, because there's loads that they've got loads of theories and scientific stuff that they can prove, but there's certain chunks in it that they're like, well, that just is because it is.
Yeah.
It's like, we can't explain
we
that,
can't
but it
explain.
Just is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
there is something else kind of,
yeah,
of there and influencing that.
Yeah, I think so. And that's what church did for me.
Yeah.
And I'll always hold on to that. Also, you know, it teaches, there's things just about like being a generous person and being a loving person and being empathetic that I think I really digested,
yeah,
through church,
yeah,
and I did away with the other stuff that comes with church, which is like the stuff that says if you have sex before marriage you're going to hell, if you're gay you're going to hell, if you're this you're going to hell, if you're going to hell, that shit, I did believe that,
yeah, yeah,
and I, for some reason, I guess hanging out with gay people, hanging out with people that were having sex all the time and then being like, you're all right.
Yeah, I can't.
It undid the.
I can't accept that.
I can't
strange
accept it.
Reality.
And no, and then you can't. I also, you can't believe it again.
Yeah,
you can't. It's such a. The lights are so bright.
Yeah.
once they're switched off.
Yeah, you can't.
It's just like this.
I turn back to it. I love that of coming to beliefs and understandings by having them tested. So, yeah, again, having a certain belief that I really believe this, and then turning round to go, right, no, there's nothing wrong with gay people.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with sex. There's,
yeah,
you know, I think that's, in many ways, that's a better understanding and a greater journey than just being brought up, which is great in a liberal world, but going, everyone's lovely. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
If you're brought up like that, it's,
yeah,
one thing, but you're kind of going along with it as blindly as those who are going along with religion.
Whereas test everything.
If you've come from that side, you can go, right, no, I'm here because I fucking believe it and,
yeah,
I mean it, not just because...
Yeah.
Well, I'm a good person and I can't think otherwise.
Exactly. I,
yeah,
completely agree. Yeah.
So we kind of talked about the kind of just natural paths of school and falling into religion. One of the most natural paths, and a lot of people who aren't aware of the spoken word scene won't know, but one of the most natural things for me I see in the spoken word scene is you get to a point and then you're like, I'm doing a one-man show or a one-person show. Is that where a Chewing Gum Dreams kind of came from? Because
it
was,
yeah,
it was more of a one person show originally, right?
Yes, it was a one woman play.
Yeah,
but you know, funnily enough, no. Right. And I think if I didn't go to drama school, I would have never done a one woman.
Yeah.
No, that's a lie. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I was doing the poetry thing, and my big scale version of that was. I'd do a big, like, a show at Stratford Circus, and you'd,
yeah,
have, I'd do, like, you know, 15 songs and poems, and other artists would come and they'd do, like, a set. It was more like I was going closer to music,
yeah,
with the,
yeah,
poetry,
yeah, yeah,
thing. How you do music on a big scale is you do a tour, you do a big concert, you don't,
yeah,
do a one-woman play.
Yeah,
That, yeah, the, you know, I was a poet, and then I realised, oh, there's, like, a whole, like, scene of poets going on.
Yeah.
There's, like, a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But by the time I was kind of like, saw it, I went to drama school.
Right.
And then completely diverted.
Yeah.
And yeah, the play was literally in your final year, you can either be in all the plays, which are like you know, very kind of costume corsets and women crying and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Or you can take yourself out of one and you can make your own thing. And that just, that was it. I wanted to tell my story. That was the appeal.
So what had drawn you to drama school? What kind of threw you in that direction?
Yes.
Or was it again a kind of, right, I want to do something?
No, it wasn't me.
You were forced there.
Yes. Basically, I was doing a poem and a guy called Che Walker, who's a writer-director, was in the audience and he said to me, you should consider being an actor. And at that point, I was in university. Yeah. I was in University of Birmingham. And so I dropped out and then did a lot of poetry stuff. Then went back to uni. I did it like a year and a couple of months. And then he told me, I was still going back to London to do these weekend classes. Then he was like, you should consider going to drama school. I didn't even know what drama school was.
Yeah.
And he showed me a list of schools. And I could afford to apply for three of those schools. So I just, basically, because I didn't really know what I was doing with my life at all.
Yeah.
It meant that if anybody tried to push me in a direction, I would just go. So basically, I could have ended up being a prostitute on heroin.
I just needed someone to give me some kind of guidance. In the direction. It's true, though, in those situations, if you don't know where you're going or what you're doing, all it can take is one person, even a stranger, saying, hey, you're good at that.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit, I was just doing it because to do something. I'm good at it.
Yeah.
Well, let's... I want to hear more people tell me that. Let's go and do that
exactly.
some more, you know?
Yeah, I never thought I would... I never thought I'd be an actor. I knew I was doing poetry and I was going towards music.
Yeah.
And at that point, I said to myself, I'm very happy to do this for little to no money for the rest of my life.
Mm.
I was having a great time. I had my friends doing backing vocalists. My guitarist was one of my friends. And someone just said, look, go and do that instead.
I love it. So generally, most people who go into acting do years of kind of, the British way is to do Casualty and The Bill and then a lot of sitcoms and gradually. Not many people get into acting by basically writing, producing, starring, doing the music for your own award-winning show.
Yeah.
So how did that route come back in? That's kind of, that's a massive a leap. Did it cut? So I assume it came from someone seeing your one-woman show and saying, There's something in that.
She read my script.
Yeah, all right.
She read it. She hadn't seen it, but I did it again, so she saw it after that. She worked a retort. And, my writing agent had sent my script out to, I don't know, hundreds of production companies.
Yeah.
And this one lady got back. One woman.
Yeah.
And she read the script, and she's from Retort, which is a comedy production company.
Yeah.
And she just said, do you want to try and develop something for TV?
Yeah.
And once again, I didn't have any plans in my life. So I just was like, cool.
Yeah.
I was probably quite lucky.
Yeah. Completely. But I think one of the things that some of my favourite things I watch or see have that feeling of, and this is an odd thing to say, but there wasn't much expectation of them, and therefore there was freedom to just do exactly what you wanted to do. And and when I got round to watching a Chewing Gum, it was exactly that. It was such a unique voice. It wasn't kind of obviously we need to try and, I don't know, establish some kind of any catchphrase. I mean, anything that we can merchandise or anything like that. It was very much, he's just a truly unique angle and story and approach that I'd not particularly seen covered in TV, and it had that realness that just made it work, I guess. So was it the faith of the lady who read the script to kind of go, right, I believe in your vision?
No, I think when you work in development, you're kind of constantly taking chances, aren't you? I think she didn't think it was going to end up where it ended up.
Yeah.
No. I don't know, having done my play, which was very, the sexual language is all very what people would call, what's the word they always use? Blunt? Is it blunt?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Is just the way I write. And I think at one point, actually, the show was too X-rated for for her.
Yeah.
Kelly, bless her, she's lovely. Yeah. But she was like, oh, this is a bit... Her cousin's trying to fuck her.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. So, I don't really know, because I do, since then, I've been told there wasn't really any shows being so sexually ridiculous. I don't know what else to really...
Yeah.
It's just a bit of a ridiculous show.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just...
But again, it's got that kind of a sexual ridiculousness, but with no playing it very matter-of-fact. Do you know what I mean? It's not playing it up as, look at how crazy this is. It's like his stuff, and you don't have time until you're afterwards to say, or to sit down and think, there was some weird shit going on there. It's kind of, it's done in a very matter-of-fact manner, which just makes it real and flow comfortably.
I'm glad. Sometimes I write something and then I go on set and I see it, like, in my face, and I'm like, ooh.
Is this
extreme. Yeah, like, ooh. You know, it's different when it's just words on a page than when you see it. Sometimes it's like, that might be a bit much, guys. Yeah. What do we think? I think we need to rein it in a bit. And we don't always rein it in.
No, so, you'll good.
Find out in season 2.
That's what works. I'm looking forward to that. What's been the kind of process and learning curve of going from kind of writing just for you to writing in a series format to writing... God. I'd imagine, do you work with other people?
No, I have a script editor who was a lot more involved in the first season.
Yeah.
Because I'd never written.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's kind of
bloody hell. In fact, I didn't have a script editor until I didn't have one.
Yeah.
I didn't have a script editor, and I hadn't even written in commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Cuz I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So we got our script editor. I'm talking a couple of months before the shoot. Like 2 months.
Yeah.
I had like 40 drafts of the first episode.
Yeah.
He came along and was basically like, this is the puzzle. This is the standard format.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you all the tricks.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is actually not like, I don't need to be in a ball crying on the floor all the time.
Yeah.
This is like, oh, I get it now.
Here's cool. how it works.
Yeah. But then after that, with the second series, I think I realized that I had a structure inside of myself that was different from the one I was given.
And
I think I realized, every writer probably has a structure inside of themselves, and you have to really find that structure. You can't just take the format that other people give you.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find what my structure is. I realized when I saw Transparent. Have you seen Transparent?
Yeah.
Because when I saw the first season of that, I was like, oh, so look, because the stories don't all wrap up at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Some of them carry on.
Yeah.
And that is what I had been doing.
Yeah.
It was almost like, in a really bad way, it was almost like I'd written a film and then divided it into six bits.
Yeah.
And I thought, there's a compromise here. There is a version where you can have storylines that stretch over all episodes and then little ones that complete themselves.
Yep.
And I saw that and was like, oh, okay, so it's not illegal.
Because
basically I was like, you know, if you've never done it, someone tells you.
Well, they've told me the structure. This is how it's meant to be. I don't know.
And I saw that, and when I can find my I've got my own version somewhere in me. So
that's wicked, though. I mean, it you probably needed to be shown here's the structure to kind of know to look for your own structure as
such.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Because otherwise, you're writing. Because that's how it's naturally coming out, and not necessarily thinking, here's why I'm writing like this. So I guess if you're shown that, you can go, right, I get that. I'm aware of that. I'm choosing to not do that, rather than not doing that because you don't know about it.
Exactly. But I think that takes a very brave writer.
Yeah.
And I'm still not there. I'm still not at a place where I can go, nope, I'm going to do my own. I'm like, can I do a little bit of, like, my version? I'm still, like, kind of, tippy-toeing with that.
It's great, though, because there's that, I'd imagine there's that gradual confidence building and the imposing of the structure that you were taught, if nothing else, will make you confirm that all your choices are choices, yes. If you know what I mean, rather than I just wrote it and that's that, you can go, right, well, I should change that, but I don't want to, and the reason is this.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So you know it's there for a reason, rather than I just don't know what I'm doing.
Exactly. You have you find a method. Yeah. You find that you have you figure out what your method is, and that's been actually fun. And if I look at the second season from 1 to 6, I can see my writing, in my personal opinion, I can see my writing get a bit stronger as I get to the end, as I do the final episodes. I can see that I'm finding who I am as a writer a bit more. Yeah.
So one of the best things in, or one of the, what will be looked up back upon as one of the best things in TV at the moment is the amount of services going digital. And it means that, as you were saying, the lady that kind of found your script and gave it a go, they can kind of throw a few different things out and see what lands, because there's not that pressure of, oh, we need to fill 8 o'clock on BBC Two.
Right.
It has to be this.
Yes.
You can go, well, I don't know where this sits, but we've got this digital world where we can kind of put anything. Just do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So and I think Channel 4 and the BBC are both great for that at the moment. And numerous things have come out, whether it be people just do nothing or chewing gum or all these different things that I think if they'd been put under the scrutiny of, so is this a Friday night Channel 4 show? Is this a Saturday night Channel 4 show? Is this a Thursday night? It might have gone, it's none of them, so leave it aside. But instead they can kind of go, let's put it out there and see what it is.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about E4.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't think Chewing Gum's a Channel 4 show. I think it's an E4 show.
Yeah.
They have an identity that they have, which is a lot more, we'll kind of go for anything. What have you got? We'll take it. Which has been nice, which means that I don't have Phil Clark, he's the head of comedy for Channel 4. He's not, he understands me as a writer.
Yeah.
And he advises me based on that rather than on what I should be.
Yeah.
Which has been really, really amazing.
It's great. And I think they're smashing it with such a variation of comedy and styles of show. And no, again, there's so many new shows in recent years that I've looked at and gone, on paper, you're like, what even is this?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no, right. It's just there. And it's been, there seems to be that faith and confidence at the moment to go. And again, that's a lot of that is going to come off the back of yourself there. Cause obviously there was a kind of a risk taken on this new writer, this new approach. And then it's gone on to be hugely successful. So how was it when it came out and people started saying, you know what, this is really good.
Like, you're
really good at this. Like, how was that? Did that affirm you as a writer and give you more confidence as a writer and a performer and everything else?
You know, I'm quite strange with compliments. Yeah.
In what way?
I think I must do it on purpose, but I think I might, the minute if I hear one, before it, like, gets to, like, before I properly hear it, I just throw it away.
Right, yeah,
it's
quite,
and then I'm beginning to feel like that's quite rude.
Right.
But I think I'm quite scared of believing what people say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
because,
fair.
Because when, which is fucking the way the world works, when what they say becomes negative, I will therefore believe that as well.
Yeah. I completely understand. Yeah. That's a massive thing, I think, on social media is people often say, if someone's saying something horrible about you, why does their opinion matter? You know, if it's someone you've never met, someone you're never going to know, why does their opinion matter? But if you are applying that rule, you have to apply that to the positive as well.
Exactly.
Because if you're like someone you've never met is saying, you're the best person in the world, it's like, well, not in a rude way. Who the fuck are you?
Who the fuck are you
to say I'm the best person in the world?
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And
yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah.
I think that's a positive thing. But surely kind of, or maybe even just the, because obviously it started to obviously, BAFTAs and all sorts of awards and praise. If nothing else, do you feel that gave the people you're working with even more confidence to allow you to, again, to find your structure, to find your rhythm and your approach, maybe?
It definitely did that.
Even if you can't take that in yourself and let it give you extra confidence.
Well,
just again,
I feel like you guys are making a mistake.
Yeah.
Like changing your opinion of me, because sometimes you can give me too much power.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck it up. And then I have to be conscious of that. Because then if I'm like, no, I'm right, I won 2 BAFTAs. No, that's just really shit. That's,
yeah.
I don't trust myself I basically ignore it all.
That's good. And that's essential. I worked with Kurt Sutter recently, who did Sons of Anarchy and loads of other stuff, and was very praising the series I did with him called The Bastard Executioner. And in that situation, it was one of them where he'd had so much praise. Again, I thought it was a fantastic show. I loved it. It's my second acting gig, so being involved in something on Fox and all that was like, fuck, this is amazing. But I think he will admit that there was so much faith in him that there was no one kind of checking the reins.
Yeah.
And it meant that he was the writer, he was in it, he was one of the producers. And at points it was too much for any one person to do. But people were so, well, he's clearly a genius, so we'll just leave you to it.
I can relate to that.
You need that balance. Yeah.
That is my life.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're screaming out for someone to say, or just say, can someone check this? Can someone make sure? Can people stop having as much faith in me as you're having?
don't. Sometimes people can rely on you.
Yeah,
because it's you.
Mm.
It's almost like they don't have to really overthink their jobs too much, and that is really, really bad.
It's such a quick jump as well, though, from being the completely new person where I'd imagine they were checking constantly and saying, well, that's not how we do it, that's not this, to being, you got this.
Yeah.
You're an award-winning writer.
Yeah.
Go right. Yeah. And then you're like,
Yeah. Oh, God.
They kind of take your confidence away and then take the support away. Initially.
Away and just give you a crown.
Yeah.
Big chair.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard. I probably age about 15 years every time I do chewing gum.
Amazing. So I mean, we'll get on to series 2, I guess. But were you focused, or was it more your agents, or whether focused on making sure you're acting in things that aren't just your vehicle and your creation? Because again, there was another one. I was a massive fan of Aliens. I thought it was fantastic.
Me too.
I love everyone in that cast. I'm just a massive fan of from Michael.
Michael Smiley
to Michael Socker to you to everyone in it was just a grace.
Oh, you interviewed Michael Socker, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah, I haven't listened
to him
yet.
On. I've had Smiley on as well. I had Smiley on really in the early days. But yes, so was it important to you to go away and do other things rather than constantly have that pressure of, oh right, I'm everyone to blame here. I'm the writer and the actor and everything else.
Fucking hell, man.
In a way, becoming just the actor, albeit in a big Channel 4 show that there was a lot of hype and excitement for, that takes a lot of pressure off, right?
Big time.
Did that suddenly feel a lot easier that you're like, not in a blasé way, but it's someone else's problem. I'm here to do me.
Yeah.
I'll do me.
Yeah.
Everything else.
Yeah, I mean, there's a balance though, because like there is, like, I remember sort of like, I would like, it was an adjustment, because I'd be thinking, no, but that's not the right costume. Or like, no, she needs tear stick, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And I had to keep telling myself, okay, so sometimes I would say.
Yeah.
And sometimes that was actually the right call. But most of the time I'd be like, none of your business.
It's an interesting one, like having to rein yourself in that way, thinking, I've got an opinion on that, and it's kind of valid because I've got experience, but equally you don't want to offend anyone or take anyone, you know, out of their role of authority or their role of...
But luckily, well, on The Aliens, Jay is like massively brilliant and collaborative and lovely, and I knew him from before.
Right, wicked.
So that was all right. My acting agent is very... She's very good, basically, and I don't just want to write and star in my own shows for the rest of my life, because that is going to kill me.
Yeah.
I can't.
It's a lot of work and a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, equally, it's working in other people's material is going to push you in areas you wouldn't have been pushed in. Exactly. Because you can only write in your own world. No matter how developed you become or abstract you become, you can only still write some way within your own world.
Yes. So
yeah, it's got to be a positive thing to have those outside influences and roles.
Definitely. And like things like I did Black Mirror this year.
Yeah.
And even just being able to like read that script. I mean,
it's amazing, wasn't it? That whole series. You were in episode 2, right?
First one, actually.
The first one. Was it the first one?
The Uber one, the rating out of 5.
Yeah. Yes, of course.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I always say people think I'm being ridiculous, but that is the best part I've ever played.
Amazing.
I'm in one scene.
Yeah.
And I just...
At the airport.
Yeah.
Loved it.
She was just amazing.
Yeah.
Like, my character was just the shit. I loved her.
Yeah.
She was so evil, and it was great to be that evil person. It was fucking brilliant. And Joe Wright's amazing.
A mirror has a rare way of writing characters. That's an extreme... almost comical level of evilness, but it was written in a very real world way, because you've built this kind of world where it's weird. You could be that evil in a science fiction type scenario, but that was close enough to where we are because of Instagram and everything else. It's like it's only a little step, yet you get to jump to this almost comic book level of evil.
And being able to, like, you know, with that whole rating out of 5, it's not just about getting on certain flights. It's how you talk to people at work in the fucking elevator.
Yeah.
There is just this way of being that we do now that's acceptable. And if you're not social in that way, you're seen as weird. You're seen as, you know, and
it's a simple concept that's beautifully deep at the same time. Because again, for anyone who's not seen it, really briefly, it's basically in life you've got a rating system. So anyone you interact with can give you a mark out of 5.
Yes.
And that affects your status, where you can live, all sorts of things like that. Yeah. But again, on one level, that's kind of a good thing, because it means it pressures everyone to be nicer to each other. It doesn't sound like a bad world where you're forcing to be nicer, but then it flips it really nicely of the nastiness that's then behind that. If that niceness isn't real and genuine, if it's that kind of thing that I always have issue these days with, trying to see who's charitable and who's charitable for the image of being charitable.
Completely.
If you know what I mean. So it's exactly that. It's that world where it's like, well, it's forcing everyone to be nicer, but if that niceness is for personal gain, then that's not really niceness. That's still nastiness. It's falseness, right?
I mean, I can relate. I was in an Uber one day, and I was being, you know, making conversation with the driver.
Yeah.
And then I remembered that I didn't book the Uber. I was like, I don't have to be nice. And then, I was like, I don't have to talk to you. I didn't even book the Uber. What am I doing? I'm going to put my earphones back on. I'm going to have a good time.
Amazing.
But, so it does make you, I was being genuinely nice.
Yeah.
And then I realised it was a weird kind of, oh, hold on.
Yeah.
I don't need to do this. Isn't that weird? So I don't know whether it's good.
It's interesting as well, though, because it's something that is going to become more and more real to your life as well. Because I think there is extra pressure on anyone that's in the public eye. Because, again, if you feel you've not been incredibly nice, then you feel there's a concern that someone's going to go, she's up her own ass or whatever. So I always remember I ate at Pizza Express and... I paid and I didn't have a change for a tip, but I just won a fiver on a scratch card. And I was like, I'll leave the £5 scratch card. Yes. I was like, that's a bit odd, but it's fine. No one knows, blah, blah. And I put it down and I got up to leave. And just as I was going out, the waiter went, I just want to say I'm a big fan of your music and this and that. And suddenly I was like, now I've left a scratch card as Scrooby as Pip, rather than as some random person's left a scratch card. And I was suddenly like,
but then you were being lovely.
I felt worse that it was this weird thing that, is that going to be taken well or poorly or...
But, I mean, I just say you'd have to explain it. You'd have to be like, I'm so I don't really change.
Yeah, but that's it. I was already out the door and I was like, I can't now just explain just because I know you know who I am and there's some weird repercussion. But, again, that's that weirdness. Again, if you've got an Uber and you're like, whatever, and then the next day or on Twitter or whatever, they're like, I had that Michaela Cole in my car the other day. Just kept her headphones on the whole time.
Yeah,
rude.
Yeah,
I didn't do anything wrong.
I just didn't do anything particularly right.
That's exactly it. You're under hyper analysis as such. So,
but it can be quite. Ubers can be tiring when you actually care about your rating. Yeah. And then I also realized the drivers often they don't want to talk to you either.
Yeah,
they just don't want you to be rude, throw up in the car. do weird sexual acts in the car,
yeah,
unless it's with them.
Yeah, some people drive quite kinky. Then 5 stars then every time stars. I've found.
You know what I mean? But if you just get in the car, blah, 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 you stop at the right place, thanks very much, have a good weekend. Exactly. That's all they want. It's just stress-free.
It's just that weird world. Like I've never given anyone on Amazon a rating. I'll get an email last week. I just never have. I just don't. And it's weird because I'm obviously doing a podcast.
Yeah.
At the end of most of them, I'll be saying, if you could rate and review. I listen to tons of podcasts. I don't rate and review shit. I just enjoy them personally and move on. So it is a weird world of double standards. Not
I do try and review. Hotels. I'm quite like...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, hotels, things on Amazon.
I guess if it's really good, I do. If it's not, it's kind of my belief that, well, if it was just what I paid for, then that should be... Do you know what I mean? That's not anything above and beyond. That's that should be the expected thing.
But I don't know. Like, I do... I think it's really important to put on the World Wide Web your opinion on... I mean, really, I'm talking about products. I'm not talking about art, because it's very subjective. But if you buy a mirror and the mirror is completely scratched up and you should write that
should
happened.
Should let people know.
Generally.
Put the warning out there.
It ties in with something that's really been pissing me off recently about makeup and hair.
Yeah.
As a black woman, you go to a photo shoot, they tell you this person's doing your hair, this person's doing your makeup. You go on their website, they send you a website.
Yeah.
There is not a single black person on your portfolio. You have 100 women.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to have comfort
that you're doing
do you know what I mean? You have to put things online to let people, it assures people.
I get that we've been trying to arrange this for a while, and again I had Lauren Laverne on a few weeks back, and we were literally over a year it took us to arrange, but I like that because it means we really want
to
do it.
Yes, you know
what
exactly. I mean, it's busy,
but we could have just gone, oh, this is hard, let's not do it. But originally when we were discussing it, one of the things I wanted to discuss was being a young black woman in the entertainment industry. But in the last few weeks, that question has kind of stepped out of the entertainment industry and gone into the world with everything that's gone on in America and things like that. So, I mean, starting in the entertainment industry, I guess, have you felt that there's been any kickback or any restraints or restriction? Because you've had quite a fast rise, so it's an odd one.
Be surprised.
But have you felt that kind of resistance? And
that is something that to me, that resistance is ever present.
Right.
That's something that runs along the course of my life. So it's almost like it's kind of really all I know.
Yeah.
And you kind of either you choose how you respond to that those restraints, and I am breaking those restraints every step that I take and I'm learning sometimes because the restraints have been there for so long that you don't actually realize that they're there.
Yeah.
And then you know, you finish a project and then you go, hold on, I wasn't treated like I should be treated.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, it is all the time. So I know I'm not explaining it very well because I'm.
I get that. That kind of, that, at points it has to be, if something has been so intrinsic in your life, at points you need to step away to go, all right, that's not acceptable. Just as I'm used to it, it doesn't mean it's acceptable. And it's been fascinating in America that most of my black friends I've spoken to have been right, this is all fucked up, it's really bad, but it's not new. It's like, I've been fighting this my whole life, and we will continue to fight this, and we're going to have to fight a little harder right now. It's weird. It seemed that it was, and this is bad as a white person, but it seemed it was a lot of my white mates who were like, the world's going to end. This is it's all so bad. Whereas most of my black mates were like, this is continuing. But it's kind of all I've known, and we're gonna, you know, this is motivation in many ways. We're gonna re-up, we're going to push harder, we're going to make sure that that we're not stamped upon. And yeah, it's a weird one. It's not an acceptance of saying it's always been like that. It doesn't matter. It's acknowledging it does matter, yeah. And it isn't acceptable and it is shit. But I don't know. It's that firmness and strength of going, like Latin America, of going, like the first person I hit up about it was like, I lived here for 8 years of Bush.
Mm, right, it's like, exactly.
Trump's a new battle, but it's not that different from, you know, it's the same kind of war as 8 years of Bush. It's like, realistically, most people can't predict Trump remaining in for 4 years. The fact he's already ranting about stuff on Twitter and shit like that isn't political or head of state kind of. The president can't be on Twitter going, that musical's horrible, or shouting at people and having a go. It's like,
yeah, this is a bizarre time. I agree. The only thing that, I took the Trump thing quite hard.
Yeah.
And I'm not even American.
Well, you were very vocal on social media, and I felt
and I'm not
incredibly inarticulately, but again, in a supportive way. It wasn't particularly in an angry way. It was saying to all the women, you've still got worth, we're going to fight and we're here. To all the black people, you've still got worth, we're going to fight. To the LGBT, we're all going to come together.
Jesus fucking
And it's
Christ.
Weird how stuff like that can be galvanizing.
The bit that what scares me though is the personal attacks that people are being personally attacked.
100%.
That's where I'm like,
the thing that is scariest about Trump to me isn't Trump. It's the people he gives confidence
Correct.
To.
Correct.
It's those who go,
we've got a leader.
If he's in charge, that means it's okay for me to be this kind of piece of shit. Because again, the fact is Trump is going to be reined in.
Yep.
He doesn't really mean half the stuff he says. You can see that. You can see he's kind of being a bit crazy. And then he's like, that moment you see it all sink in. And he's like, well, no, that's not, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah. It's the people that have appointed him as their leader.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he might have been chatting shit, but they're not.
Yeah.
And they've been waiting for an excuse to do a lot of fucked up shit.
Completely. He might not believe any of it, but they fucking do.
Yeah.
Again, he knows that you can't say, I'm going to build a wall and someone else is going to pay. That's not how it works.
That's not how it works.
I can't say, if you'd come in today, I couldn't have said, good to see you. By the way, I've just had some work done in my garden and you're paying for it. Here's the bill.
Yeah.
And expect you to go, I'd best pay for that then. It's like, that's not how the world works. Yet there was a load of idiot people who were very much,
but this is what I'm saying.
The Mexicans are going to pay for it.
It's
where's the logic there?
It's the condition of people's brains.
Yeah.
And I'm not the smartest person in the world.
I'm not.
But some people,
that's why I stay out of loads of this stuff.
What I mean?
It's like, if I don't feel I can add to something, and again, that's kind of a problem. I think we have a lot on social media, and people are saying that it's the left's fault for lashing out at everything, and so on and so forth. There's loads of different views, but I do think we have a world now where everyone feels they need to have a view on everything, even if they've not got an informed and researched view.
Yeah.
It's like, that's important. I need to give my view. It's like, what's your view adding? Who the fuck are you?
That's why.
Not in a rude way or an aggressive way. Like, who are you? Why should I listen to it? And if you can say, because here's my thing, then I go, all right, that's cool. But if you're just, well, this other person posted and I'm pushing that.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
But sometimes I feel like that is just our, and I just lashed out. That is our version of that now.
It's exposed now.
We just
want to
put it out there. Yeah, we just want to put it out, you know.
It's stuff that potentially you'd say angrily to a mate and then they'd go, oh, no, that's not quite right. And you go, all right, shit.
Yeah,
and then it dies there. Whereas now it's in cyberspace forever. And you have your moment and someone starts attacking it and it makes you stronger.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Like, no.
No.
It was a half fault, but now I'll die for that half fault.
Yeah. And exactly. And I don't do half thought out tweets anymore because you realise, hey, everybody can see that.
Yeah.
You don't fully realise everyone can see that until you realise everybody can see that.
It's weird, man, because I think it's really important, and it's why I enjoy, are you on social media and numerous other people, I think it's really important that despite building a following, that you are yourself on there.
Yeah.
And again, the thing that I always have is I try not to think about it as part of my marketing network, which I guess it is in a way. I try to think of it as if It's just me and my mates. Really? And you can't go too far on that. But I tried to
You can't.
Here's something I think. Here's something stupid and not over worry, but. It's a weird balance.
I've had to kind of distance myself from Twitter, you know. Like, yeah. I did a lot of tweets when Trump, towards the end of the elections.
Yeah.
And there's a couple other, like, I'm big on any kind of rape issue.
Yeah.
I'll tweet something. But I've stopped, like, I don't have notifications for Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
Because it can be a bit mad.
It can be absolutely insane. It can be hideous.
It's mad, yeah. I always remember, stay away.
I think it's Hannibal Buress who's got a bit where he's saying about how mad Twitter is that he can be walking along the street having a good day and then someone direct to his pocket can tell him that he's an idiot or that he doesn't like him. And he's like, direct to my pocket. Direct. I'm walking along the street. I'm not at work. I'm not performing. And then direct to my pocket, you can say, fuck you, Hannibal.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Am I opening myself up to?
Exactly,
what is this?
Exactly. So don't. Yeah, I ignore it all.
Yeah.
Ignore it all until someone says, look what everyone's tweeting.
You need to go and check this out.
Yeah. There's a couple, a guy called Kid Fury. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No,
he is the one he tweeted about chewing gum.
Yeah.
And basically, like, overnight, it's wicked. Like everybody watched chewing gum.
Amazing.
Because of him. And that's Twitter. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm glad it's there, but I can't get too involved.
I love that. So, a background to series two. Is it all done?
We're in the edit now.
You're in the edit now.
Finally. Amazing. It's all shot.
How was that kind of returning to it as a successful show compared to doing it the first time as a, we don't really know what this is or where this is going to go?
Yeah.
Well, was there a difference or did you kind of have that holding it down?
You know what? I'll be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I never doubted the success of chewing gum before
that's great.
It was
yeah,
out.
Yeah.
I don't think most people didn't really think about it having a success.
Yeah,
the way I was thinking about it, I always knew it would do me a solid. I was like, I know this show's going to do me a solid.
Yeah,
it did.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an anxiety, but I had like I've done it once. Come on, Michaela, you can do it again.
Yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah.
And once you get the first, because I'm writing it before the shoot, I've already dealt with all the kind of issues of this is not as good as the first one, or oh my God, this is the best series ever made by anybody in the world.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is shit.
Yeah.
Oh, then now that it's up on its feet, this thing is fucking shit. It's
you've
just,
gone for all that in the edit and in the writing.
Yeah. So then by the time I'm on set, and because I'm producing, really, I can't be thinking. All I'm thinking about is we've got 2 hours left here.
Yeah.
We've got to get this done.
Madness.
Her wig is not right because there's so much of that to think about that I don't really have. I don't have the, whatever those anxieties are.
Yeah.
They there's no room for them
once
you're shooting the fucking thing.
Yeah. It's got to be done.
Oh, it's got to be
in the can and move on. I love it. So I kind of want to touch upon as well because. I started watching the first series. I loved it. And then I went online instantly because I wanted to buy the theme tune and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And it annoyed me. What's the deal with music as well? So you were saying that your spoken word was kind of going more towards music when you did the one woman play. So do you still write music or do you only write for
the show
and stuff like that?
Yeah, I'm not writing music at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm just, even for the second series,
busy.
I didn't write any. Yeah, no, there's no time.
Got other shit to do.
Yeah. You know what? I love writing music. But exactly, there's no time. And those tracks, people, I sometimes get a message from people saying, where can I get the track? Or is there a full track?
Yeah.
There is definitely a full track. But you just can't get it.
You can't have it.
No. Well, maybe one day I'd have to, like, get it properly mixed and mastered and do the whole thing properly. But there ain't no time for that. If I was a really good singer as well, I'd be like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
But I am. I'm happily average. I'm happy in my average place. No one's going to be desperate to, like, produce my next album.
Right. I see.
Five notes and I'm done.
That's perfect. That's all you need. There's people who've been successful on less notes.
Well, exactly. Yeah, it's true.
So I'll start to wrap things up as we're at the hour mark. So what's ahead? Has Chewing Gum got a a release date for series two yet? Have you got anything locked in?
Mid-July, apparently. Second week of July.
But... fantastic. So what's ahead after that? Is that consuming all of your plans, or do you kind of know a few other things?
I know the whole year, but
the tough thing is, the tough thing speaking to any actors is like, what can you actually mention? And it's generally not a thing. I'll tell you this now because it'll be coming out afterwards. I've just had an email off a person I recorded a podcast with last week from their agent saying, I know you've got my guy on the podcast soon. We've just decided that we're going to allow him to talk about this particular series that's coming out. Here's all the information. It's already recorded and we already talked about it. So it's kind of good. I'm now going to email back going, thanks, that's perfect. Yeah. I'll prep that for when we do the interview last week. Kind of that scary thing of, oh, I'm glad we've got permission. Right? Yeah. I saw the headline of the email and thought, I'm going to have to cut some shit out.
It's like, it was actually
we want to talk about this. Here's that. I was like, all right.
Great. Now I will. I can't.
You can't talk about it, but that's all good. This is going to be out mid-December. No, so, yeah.
I don't think it'll be out.
It's going to be a
different year.
Excellent.
A different year full of different things.
That's cool. I was going to say, was there a conscious a choice from you to go? Because obviously, yeah, the success of the first series of Chewing Gum, there's going to be, well, we need to maximise on that and jump on that. And particularly as you start to win awards, we've got to work straight on series two. Was there a conscious thought in your mind? It's like, right, after this, I need to do some stuff that isn't chewing gum. Some stuff that isn't just me.
Do it, Well, I mean, we got the commission for the second series way before the BAFTAs.
Oh, wicked.
Way before. I'm talking 5 months.
Amazing.
I got the commission for that while Chewing Gum was on E4.
Awesome.
After like the third episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is fucking amazing.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Not every day that happens.
No, that's real good.
And so once again, I'm going to just see what happens. Oh, yeah, when it comes to like maximising on like doing like season after season after season, I don't know if that's the way I'm going to go.
Right,
Because I'm one writer.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I finish a series and I'm like, it's not quite the end.
Yeah.
Then I believe in, unless I'm going to write another one. But sometimes the story will complete itself.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not.
Yeah. It's perfect. I'm going to wrap things up there because I feel I'm forcing you to walk around what you can and can't say very carefully.
Yes,
so
exactly.
I don't want to put that pressure on you to go, well, possibly this is, you know. So that's perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on
Absolute
and chatting.
Pleasure.
And where can people keep up to date with all you're doing? You're on Twitter and
probably just
and stuff like that. And,
Google
and it's just
maybe
at McKay. Yeah, they can find you. You're about.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad we got around to doing this.
Yes, me too.
And now you get to have a few days of rest and recuperation. Right?
Yes. So that's, can we do your song? Can we do your Soulja Boy remix?
Yeah, we can do that. We can do the remix. Let's do it. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
You've been listening to Scrooby's Picks Discretion Pieces.
There we go. I told you it was a good one, didn't I? I recommend, in this period of Christmas when there's a lot of sitting around and watching or sitting around and being bored, I recommend you check out Chewing Gum on, I guess it's on 4OD. You can watch it all for free on there. It's fantastic. I recommend if you can find Aliens as well, I assume that's on 4OD. That had Michael Smiley and Michael Socker and tons of people I love. So yeah, check them out. I'll imagine you've all already seen Black Mirror on Netflix because it's amazing. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff to check out. I'm going to leave you. I'm going to give a little plug again to speechofelementrecords.com. Head there. I've signed a load of stuff. I've popped in and signed a load of stuff because I thought that's good for Christmas presents. I've been doing it towards the end of this year anyway. But there's signed books and CDs and DVDs and all sorts of stuff. The signed DVD would be a great gift for the Scroobius Pip fan. So yeah, head over there, speechdevelopmentrecords.com, and check all that out. And we'll be back next week with a lot of drunkenness with me, Stu Whiffin, Chris Glasson, Brett Goldstein, and Ramesh Ranganathan. It's going to be, quite frankly, a fucking mess. See you next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.